Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Whoever took them or whatever happened, because we don't know what happened. We haven't got leads on this in a long time. There hasn't been call-ins on this in a very, very, very long time. So this is one of those cases that kind of just nags at you, you know. You wish you had something that would surface so that you can try and bring some closure to this.
And it's been since day one that I'm the advocate for my family. Some of my older brothers and sisters, they can't handle it. My little brothers and sisters were too little, so it just got thrown on my shoulders. And it's a path that I never wanted to take, but it's my life. And I want answers for my brothers and sisters, and they deserve them as well as I do. It's hard because, I mean, we're going back 20-something years. Some people moved. Some might have passed already, trying to find them. Some of them, they fall off the grid. They're hard to try to track down. It's harder to solve.
On May 23, 1993, 14-year-old Danielle Pitcher left the family home with her mother, Dorothy. The two planned to walk to the local convenience store in Sunazona, Arizona, to buy some cigarettes for her father. On their way, they stopped at Danielle's sister Dana's house, and then they continued on their walk. Although witnesses spotted them walking along their route that day, Danielle and Dorothy never made it home, and haven't been seen in the 26 years since that day. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 189 of The Vanished, Danielle and Dorothy's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Sunazona, Arizona is a very small town just north of the international border between the United States and Mexico. The large Pitcher family, composed of Dorothy and John Pitcher and their 14 children, had settled there after moving from the East Coast. Back in 1993, six of the 14 Pitcher children were still living at home. The Pitchers struggled to make ends meet, but made sure to take time with each child for small treats and playdates. On this particular day, Mom Dorothy took Danielle along with her for her walk to purchase cigarettes for her husband at the store several miles from their residence. For this story, we interviewed one of Danielle's sisters, Dawn, who shared what life was like in the tiny town of Sunazona and what she remembers about Danielle.
She was silly. She was, you know, she loved to sing, and she had this pitch in her voice when she sang. I can't even do it. But she would sing, and she's just happy and silly, and she was great. You know, we all had our little nicknames. My name's Lola, and everyone had a nickname, and we all usually still go by them to this day. Hers was Smelly Danielle. That's what we would call it, and it was just because it just rhymed, I guess. I don't know, but she was just a fun, happy-go-lucky, good person. The reason why we went there is because my little brother Jesse had severe arthritis and he would fall a lot. And so they said the warmer weather. And also because my Nana, my mom's mom, loved it down there. So we went there, and then we lived in Tucson down the south side. We lived there for a few years, and then my parents just moved to Kansas Settlement Road.
Dawn was older than Danielle and was no longer living with her parents. In fact, she hadn't been to Sunazona until after Danielle and Dorothy disappeared. But this is how she described the town.
I moved to Boston, and then that's when my family moved to Sunazona. And like I said, I had never been there until this all went down and I went down. The road heading to the store, the only traffic that would be on that road would be the people who lived on it. It's dirt road. It's windy. It's only people who would be, there's no reason, unless you were going to visit somebody, there's no reason. Like a 18-wheeler truck wouldn't be driving down those roads.
May 23rd, 1993 was a warm spring day that started like any other Sunday. The Pitcher children went to church while parents Dorothy and John Pitcher stayed home and spent some rare time alone together. When the children arrived home from church, John offered to make lunch while Dorothy went to the store to purchase cigarettes for him. The family had a car, but Dorothy preferred to walk for exercise. Occasionally, if it was too hot, Dorothy would ask for a ride from some locals who passed her while she was walking. As Dorothy was getting ready to leave, she asked one of the other children if they'd like to accompany her on her errand, but that child declined. Dorothy then asked Danielle, who agreed to go along with her. According to the family, Danielle and Dorothy left at approximately 1 p.m. to go to the store. When they left, they only had the clothes on their backs and $3 to purchase the cigarettes. They left behind all of their belongings, including Dorothy's purse, which was normal for her to do on her walks. Around 1:30 p.m., Danielle's older sister Dana said they stopped by her house but left after a short visit. Dorothy had asked Dana if she wanted to accompany them, but Dana declined because she wasn't feeling well. Around this same time, Sunazona local Danny Morris claims to have seen them walking along the road leading to the store. Danny and Dorothy knew each other, and Danny told John Pitcher he would have offered Dorothy and Danielle a ride that day, but they were going in the opposite direction. With this timeline in mind, Dawn walked us through what happened that day.
My little brothers and sisters went to church, and my mother and father were home. And when the kid came home from church, my mother asked my youngest sister, Chantel, if she wanted to walk to the store with her. And Chantel said no. So Danielle said that she would go. They left to go to the store. My father stayed home with the other kids. They walked to the store. It was like a 2-mile walk. But that's how my mother got exercise. My mother and sister just disappeared. They did send out the police officer's canine, and they pick up the scent of my mother and sister leaving the house, walking to my other sister's house, Dana, where I forgot to add that they did ask Dana if Dana wanted to go, but Dana had recently just had a child. And so she said she wasn't feeling well and wanted to stay home, but come back and get us so we can go have dinner with you guys. It was about a 2-mile walk each way. So I would say probably, I mean, depends on how fast they walked or how slow they walked. So maybe 2 hours. And they would also frequently take rides from people who offered them one. If they knew the person who pulled over, I mean, it was a rural town. It's very, very small. There's only a population of like 200 in that area. So ultimately, if someone pulled over you, I would assume you knew him to see if you wanted a ride. Dana, they never came back to get her. So she ended up going to my father because they didn't have a house phone at the time and saying, what happened? Why didn't Mom and Danielle come back and get me? And my father told her that they hadn't even gotten home yet. So they went looking through pretty much the desert. They're all dirt roads or the highway to walk. And they went to the store. They said, yes, they were there. They left hours ago. And then so my father proceeded to call the police. The Cochise County said, since Danielle is with a parental person, you can't do it for 48 hours. So 48 hours later, they came, and that's when the canine picked up their scent, leaving the house, taking their all back dirt roads that they walked to get to the store, and then they walked the main road, and then they just scent disappears at the S-curve.
When Dorothy and Danielle failed to return home that day or by the next morning, the family immediately started looking for the pair. Here's Dawn.
Then you wonder, well, where are they? You're calling all their friends. I mean, my mom didn't call my Nana, who she spoke to at least twice a week. None of Danielle's friends have seen her. And my mom's best friend, I mean, her sisters, her brothers, we were looking everywhere. And when my dad said, her purse is still here, she only took enough money to buy what she was supposed to buy, and it was my father's cigarette.
We were lucky enough to be granted access to Dorothy and Danielle's missing persons file. Inside, we found a lot of information that hadn't previously been released to the public. In early searches for Dorothy and Danielle, a dog picked up their scent and followed it to the RV park store. Police spoke to the owner, who said that Dorothy had been in with one of the children the day prior, but not on Sunday. A woman who was working as a cook at the RV store had a different story. She said that she saw Dorothy and Danielle come into the RV store, buy ice cream, and then go around the building and continued walking. A local pastor contacted the police and stated that someone had told him that they had seen the pair at the RV store and walked around the building and used the payphone. With this tip about the payphone, investigators contacted the telephone company to see if they could get a list of phone calls made from that payphone on the day of their disappearance. If they did call someone, that could be an important lead. This ended up being a dead end. They were told that due to the mechanics of the telephone system, it was impossible for them to give a list of phone numbers called from the phone booth at the RV park. Another employee at the RV park had yet another story. She said that 2 days prior to their disappearance, she had picked Dorothy up when she saw her walking to the store. Dorothy was buying cigarettes for her husband that day too, but she was 30 cents short. This woman loaned her the 30 cents. Dorothy promised her that she would repay her on Saturday, but the woman said that she was off on Saturday, so they agreed to Sunday instead. This woman was certain that she would remember if Dorothy came in that day because they were supposed to meet. With all this confusion over whether or not they made it to the RV park store, John Pitcher spent a lot of time thinking about this. He told investigators that he believed that he figured out why there was so much confusion over whether or not they stopped at the RV store. He believed that they never made it to the store, and that those who thought they saw them were remembering when she came in the previous day. John said that Dorothy was very conscientious about ensuring that he had an adequate supply of cigarettes on hand. When they left on Sunday, they were only going to purchase cigarettes and left with exactly $3 of the $7 in cash they had at home. The day before, she had gone to the store with another one of her daughters, and they did buy ice cream, as the store personnel had described. Later in the evening on Saturday, Dorothy had purchased a container of ice cream from the Schwann's truck, so he thought there was no need for her to buy ice cream at the RV store, since they had some at home. Whether or not they made it to the RV store that day, or if some witnesses were remembering when Dorothy was there the day prior, remains a mystery to this day. Shortly after their disappearance, police began to focus their investigation on Danielle's father and Dorothy's husband, John Pitcher. The police interviewed all of the Pitcher children, including a child they had been babysitting the entire weekend. All of the children gave consistent accounts about the events that took place the weekend that Dorothy and Danielle disappeared, and they didn't appear to be coached. Some of the interviews yielded important information. One child said that Dorothy had been planning a trip back east and wanted to take Danielle with her, and others said that their father, John Pitcher, tended to drink too much, but so did Dorothy on occasion. Overall, though, the accounts of the children were consistent and did not indicate any kind of abuse within the home or perception that there was family involvement in the pair's disappearance. John had not reported Dorothy and Danielle missing until the following day. When asked about this by the police, he said that he was at his job as a night watchman at the local school, and he couldn't leave his post. However, when police called the school, they were informed that Mr. Pitcher didn't work at the school but volunteered to stand watch at night, and that he could come and go as he pleased. This seemed like an odd inconsistency, but this wasn't the only instance in which Mr. Pitcher's story didn't make sense. I mentioned earlier that Dorothy liked to walk to the store, and that's why she chose to do so on May 23rd. John Pitcher told the police that she had walked to the store that day because the car was broken down. But later that night, when Dorothy and Danielle had not returned, he drove to his daughter Dana's house to see if she had seen the pair. John told investigators that something inside him told him that something bad had happened to his wife. He said he was sleeping on the couch when the door blew open, and he had a premonition of his wife standing there bleeding. He stated that he got up, but no one was there. The police eventually cleared John Pitcher of any involvement in the case, and he passed a polygraph exam. But these discrepancies are odd nonetheless. It's also important to note that there are other factors that reduce the likelihood that Mr. Pitcher was involved in the disappearance of Dorothy and Danielle. For example, the Pitchers had been babysitting a friend's child over the weekend. He was a young boy that they often looked after. He gave a statement to police that was consistent with the Pitcher children's police interviews. None of the children, nor the visiting child, saw or heard anything that pointed to Mr. Pitcher's involvement. When Dorothy and Danielle disappeared, John Pitcher struggled to care for so many children without his wife. Dawn told us that not only was she looking for her sister and mother, but she was also learning to grow up and raise kids fast.
It pretty much killed my father. Within 5 years, my dad died. And me and a couple of my other sisters had to take the little kids and raise them as our own. You know, the detectives that were on the case at the beginning would call the family, do all of that, but then they were just dealing with my father. Then there were a couple of sisters that would call down, and then I would call down, and, you know, we'd all try to keep a fire going.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. With John Pitcher cleared, the investigation went cold for many years. With few clues to go on, police chased down many false leads that came from various psychics all over the country. A tip came in saying that Dorothy had allegedly had an affair with a man who moved to another state prior to their disappearance, but he too was quickly ruled out. Eventually, they began to focus on several others who lived in the area. One thing that several people stated during interviews was that Dorothy always told her children to never take a ride from a stranger. Dorothy was never known to get rides from strangers herself, but she did sometimes get rides from locals that she knew. What if they got into a vehicle with a local who harmed them? I mentioned earlier that a neighbor, Danny Morris, had seen Danielle and Dorothy walking along the S-shaped curve of the highway. He said that they had waved at him. Danny was with his wife and two neighbors at the time. They were driving together, but in two separate vehicles. They had never been formally interviewed or cleared by police. Over the years, investigators began to hear rumors about his possible involvement in the case. In 2002, they were told that years ago, Danny had a young blonde girl at his home that he was holding against her will. They were able to track down one person who seemed to know more about this. This man told them that years ago, he and a friend came upon Danny Morris and another man burning something in a barrel. Danny told them to leave the area, and they did. Years later, they returned to the area, found the barrel, and saw bones, but didn't move them or report it to the police. Investigators located the barrel and the bones, but they were determined to be animal bones. Investigators interviewed Danny in 2003 to find out what his involvement may have been. Danny told the police that he knew John and Dorothy Pitcher, and that he and his wife sometimes enjoyed drinks with the couple. He also recalled seeing Danielle and Dorothy walking to the store on May 23rd, telling police they were already around that curve there, headed towards Sunazona. They were probably, a good quarter of a mile around that curve. At the time of this interview, Danny was facing federal firearms charges and significant prison time. The police were hoping to exchange valuable information about what happened to Dorothy and Danielle in exchange for leniency on the federal charges. Danny insisted that he did not know what happened to the pair and even offered to take a polygraph exam. In 2009, they went back to the man who had given them the tip about the barrel and asked for more information, and he certainly had a lot more to offer this time around. He said that two men had picked the pitchers up at the S-curve on the highway and took them to a property that belonged to the Morris family. This man claims that he was at the Morris residence that day and asked who the women were. One of the men said that Danielle was his girlfriend, and he just didn't give it much thought. He was later told that Danielle was kept for a period of time before being murdered and buried in the basement of a house on the property, and a concrete slab was poured over the area. He didn't know what happened to Dorothy. Shockingly, this informant said that not only was Danielle killed and buried there, but that Danielle and Dorothy weren't the only victims of the Morris family. He stated that a couple years prior to the disappearance of the Pitchers, Danny went to Texas and picked up a teen girl who was a runaway. He allegedly brought her back to his property and kept her there for a period of time, but that she was eventually murdered, and that she was also buried on the property under another concrete slab. He had seen this girl at the Morris property and thought she may have been 15 to 16 years old, with shoulder-length blonde hair. He said that she was kept there for the Morris men to rape. That included Danny, his brother John, and their father Richard, who was a sex offender. He remembered a time when he had seen Danny drive up to a Little League game that he was attending, and he had the blonde girl with him. She looked scared. He watched as Danny got out of his truck and went to speak with his father. Another man came up to the truck, and the girl exited and got into that man's truck. Danny saw this and ran to the other truck, grabbed the girl, punched her in the face, and then dragged her back to his truck and sped away. He claims that he went to the Morris property to see what happened to the girl. When he arrived, she was being pushed into the house, and he asked who she was. Danny's father said that she was his girlfriend. He was later told by Danny's brother John that while he was raping the girl, he accidentally strangled her. John allegedly told him that his mother had tried to help the girl escape, and was beaten by Danny when he found out. Their mother moved out of state shortly after this incident. While I was reading the picture file, I was shocked. I kept thinking that we have a whole other mystery on our hands. As I continued to read further, I learned that investigators identified a possible match for this girl from Texas. Her name is Deanna Michelle Merrifield. She disappeared back in 1990, which fits with the informant's story about this happening prior to Dorothy and Danielle disappearing. Deanna was 13 when she went missing and was reported as a runaway. Deanna's sister says that she left in a vehicle with two men. She said she was going to Arizona with these two guys and was going to make lots of money. Could Deanna be the person that the informant claims was being held captive at the Morris property? I found something else that seems to back up this claim. A Texas Department of Safety analyst mentioned that she had an aunt who lived in Arizona near the Morris family and remembers that around 1990, when Deanna disappeared from Texas, that a slim blonde girl named Dina was living on the Morris property. Her aunt remembers Danny Morris's mother being beaten and abused for trying to help this girl leave, which is also what the informant claimed. In later interviews conducted with Danny's sister-in-law, she related to police that her ex-husband, John Morris, and his brother Danny had killed Dorothy and Danielle and concealed their remains on the property. She stated that John Morris had told her this story many times. She spoke of a time when Danny Morris, his brother John, and another man got together and were drinking and using methamphetamine. They all discussed the kidnapping of Dorothy and Danielle, their murders, and the disposal of their remains on the property owned by the Morris family. One of the other pitcher children began receiving phone calls and emails from a woman in the area telling her that Dorothy and Danielle had been killed and disposed of in blue barrels. This woman did not reveal her identity because she was in fear of retaliation. In late 2009, after several witnesses gave consistent accounts that Dorothy and Danielle were raped and murdered on the Morris property, police obtained a search warrant for the property for the purpose of searching for human remains. The University of Arizona brought out resources including ground-penetrating radar devices, as well as their forensic anthropologists. The search did yield some bone fragments. However, most were determined to have belonged to animals, and nothing related to Danielle or Dorothy was located during the search. It seems as though this lead was taken as far as they could, but there just isn't enough to go on. Today, Danny is incarcerated on unrelated charges. His brother John is paralyzed after being shot by police during a domestic dispute, and his father Richard is deceased. All three men have extensive criminal backgrounds, and as I mentioned, Richard was a registered sex offender. The police also had some other people they wanted to talk to about suspected involvement. One of these individuals was Robert Charles Brown, a notorious serial killer who admitted to committing at least 48 murders. However, the police research showed that Brown was not in Arizona at the time that Danielle and Dorothy disappeared, and this lead quickly fizzled. Dawn told us that there was another lead in the case.
Something did happen to her before the situation of her being missing. And what it was my father had a friend of his would come to the house and hang out with my dad. And apparently, he was molesting and Danielle. And when my father found out, he tried to hurt the guy. The guy got arrested and went to jail because my mother and father took my sisters to the police department so they can be interviewed. I've seen pictures of Danielle, and I have pictures of Danielle before that incident ever happened. And then I have pictures of her after that incident happened. And it was, I want to say, a year before. And my mother and father pressed charges. Because I guess he tried to do it to another sister and she went crazy and then confronted Danielle and that's when it went to my mother and father. The gentleman who did it, his name was Sherman Harper, they researched him to see if that had happened, if it was him. He was still in jail. The pictures that I saw of Danielle after you know, like when you could see it in her face. I have some pictures of her just like being at school doing something. And she didn't have that vibrant look to her like she did in the past. He was in prison and he was investigated to make sure that he was, like, researched and everything to make sure that he was in prison, that he had no connection to it.
Danielle's sister Dawn isn't sure what happened to her mother and sister, but she does have some thoughts about what may have happened to them.
Somebody pulled over and said, because now this is on a highway, the S-curve where the scent just disappeared, where somebody could have offered them a ride. If my mother said no, if my mother said sure, and then took them, or if my mother said no when they grabbed my sister and said, get in the car. But according to the story that this gentleman said to me before he died, they grabbed him. They kept Danielle alive for a couple of weeks. My mother was dead within 24 hours.
Despite initial frustrations with the lack of progress on the case, Dawn has renewed hope in the current law enforcement investigation. In late 2009, the Albuquerque Police Department called Cochise County, Arizona, about some human remains located in their jurisdiction back in 1994. The Albuquerque police stated that a reconstruction of the remains bore a striking resemblance to Dorothy Pitcher. Unfortunately, the DNA results demonstrated that the remains were not Dorothy, and yet another lead was exhausted. Still, Dawn remains positive with the continued investigation. She shared one experience in which she was able to visit one of the people considered to be a person of interest.
The newest detectives, they're even doing a better job. Like I said, I was out there like a year and a half ago, and the detective, her and I, went out, we hung posters, we talked to people, we did a few things, and then 2 years before that, I went out and I met a gentleman who the two detectives that were on the case at the time, one is still on the case, the other one's retired. We're still following up on the leads from that, from what he said, because we cannot prove it. It's finding where this all went down and if there's any type of remains or anything like that, because right now all we have is this gentleman saying who did it, what they did. He witnessed something, but he didn't stop it, is what his words were. I should have stopped it, but drugs were more important than doing the right thing. And that's why he was apologetic flying down there. Anyone can realize what was going through my mind, what I was feeling. Am I going to just attack this man? Because I didn't know what he wanted to tell me. He passed like 5 days, 5 to 7 days after I left. He was so close to death, that's why they wanted me down there, because whatever he had to say, they wanted to be heard. They called me and they said, we'd like to know if you want to come out. There's a gentleman that was in jail, says he has information, he's dying, and he wants it to get off his chest. And I said, when do you need me? I'll be on the next plane. And I went down there. It took a toll on me. I won't lie. It was tough. And the detectives were very, very caring, very wonderful. They want answers just as much as we want answers. And so with that all said, I believe that what this gentleman, and I told the detectives, I believe every word he said, so much that he sat there and cried. He was a mess. And I mean, I guess he tried to commit suicide because he was in jail and they released him due to his sickness. And he had tried to commit suicide. He put a rifle in his mouth and blew off half his face. So they had to show me these pictures of him if I was willing to sit with him the way he looked. And it wasn't nice, but I did it anyway. Everything he said, I believe he was genuine. And one of his words he did say, he sat there, half his face blown off in his hospital gown, crying. And he said to me, I'm so sorry. And I asked the gentleman, do you know who I am? And he said, yes. And he started crying and told me I didn't do anything about it. I didn't do anything. I should have done something. But drugs and everything meant more to me.
Nearly 3 decades later, I asked Dawn what she thinks happened to her mother and sister. Does she think her father was involved? What about one of the sketchy locals that was involved in other criminal activity? There are so many possibilities, but just no evidence.
No one had seen them, no one had heard them, from them. Nothing had been different. And the people of interest were walking around town. I know that one of the people that are of interest threatened somebody else and said, you better watch your step or you're going to end up like the pitcher girl. There's a couple of scenarios that, believe you me, I think of. One of them is we lived very close to the Mexican border, and my sister Danielle had beautiful, beautiful white blonde hair, big blue eyes, and trafficking. That was one of my scenarios. Another one was a couple of the people of interest that we believe that we are considering and almost in our heart of hearts believe. My father ended up putting one of them in jail. And then another one was married to my sister that my mother and sister walked to their house. And he used to beat the crap out of my sister. And my father put him in jail. According to what was said, again, hearsay, but a lead to follow, was when he got out of jail, he got out only like maybe, I want to say 10 days before they became missing. And he said, Jack is going to feel the pain from him putting me in there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
The Cochise County Sheriff's Office is the department handling Danielle and Dorothy's case. For this story, we spoke with Detective J.C. Hoke, who shared more about his background in law enforcement.
My name is Juan Carlos Hoke. Everybody refers to me as J.C. I'm a detective assigned to the Major Crimes Unit. I've been in law enforcement now for 34 years. I've worked for the Somerton Police Department in Yuma County. I've worked for the Sheriff's Department. This is my second venture back because I left them for a period and went to U.S. Customs and then later into Homeland Security, where I was assigned working in the anti-terrorism program. And then in 2005, I came back to the Sheriff's Department.
Detective Hoke is an experienced law enforcement officer. He told us how he became involved in the Pitcher case.
The unit that I belong to, Major Crimes Unit, it's called that for a reason. Generally, us five guys are generally only assigned the major crap. But we get some of the missing person cases and what have you too. But generally, we're not in the realm of the other detectives who are doing all the other kind of stuff. It's all significant, but I guess the more dastardly things, if you want to say it. And you know, that's the majority of my cases are sexual assault, sex crimes cases, and sex crimes cases involving children.
We don't know what happened to Danielle and Dorothy, if there was a plan to take them, or if they were abducted at all. But Detective Hoke told us about some of the possible suspects they've considered over the years.
Two people in particular, Danny Ray Morris, in fact, he's in state prison now. And the other, I don't have the case file in front of me, but I believe he was a De La Cruz, were persons of interest. And when, let me focus on De La Cruz first. When we came to focus on him, we had already learned that he had passed away in a prison in Mexico, that he had acquired AIDS, and he did something in Mexico, and they imprisoned him, and apparently they didn't have the medical staff to care for him because of what he was suffering from, and I guess eventually, from what I understand, is he died from AIDS while in custody in a Mexican prison. So, obviously, that was a lead that we were always hoping to go with, And then Danny Ray Morris's name came up, he was seen in the area driving around. He is one of the local problems, if you will. I even at one point, and I think it's on one of those supplements, I believe, that at one point I had a person come forward and tell me that he thought that one evening, Danny Ray and a group of other guys were disposing of the pitcher's bodies by way of burning them in a backyard. And he told us of an area that this was done at, and that, you know, it probably need to be watched to see if people are still going in and out of there and what have you. And what I had done is I contacted ATF. I had a lot of contacts and still do with ATF. And they generally, in our state, and I think this is pretty much for all states, they assist local law enforcement with pole cams. So I had them set me up a pole cam, and I monitored it for a few weeks. They made it look like they were linemen, electrical linemen working on the power line, and they set the camera up on this house. And anyhow, long story short, I was able to remotely monitor it from my phone and from a computer. All I had to do was type in a code that I was given, and then I could see and I can move the camera and what have you with my phone or off my computer. And I never came up with anything significant. There was also rumor of the bodies of them being possibly burnt and the remains buried in a couple areas in particular. Those areas were completely looked at, inspected, and I was never able to come up with anything that would suggest there's an old burn site or anything. We did a search warrant a few years ago because we had also received info that Danny Ray had possibly, with the help of his father, who's deceased now, had possibly buried the bodies on one of their properties. Search warrant was drafted for that area, and a big team from the University of Arizona came out with ground penetrating radar. I'm not sure what we paid to have that done. I know it was a lot. Even though it was the University of Arizona's equipment, it still costs to run that equipment and hire the people from the university to operate that equipment. And then we had the county in there with bulldozers, all kinds of things. We literally, I think, moved a building because they were told that, yeah, they may have built over that site, poured a slab and did a building. And Well, we bulldozed it out and did the radar. And if I'm not mistaken, that parcel was about a 20-acre parcel. And that operation took, I think it was about a week of, we secured that area. We had teams on it for the entire time that the search warrant was being executed. It was always secured. People were not allowed to come and go, you know, other than us, of course, that were doing the investigation. And everything that we've done has led to nothing.
Despite extensive searches using all the resources at their disposal, Detective Hoke says that the case is now cold as no new leads have come in.
Obviously, that's what we work with is evidence, and I don't have none of that. I don't have nothing that I can scientifically examine or, you know, do touch DNA and, hey, I think this was her and I saw her. She was smoking a cigarette and I grabbed it and here, I'm going to send it to you. Or can you have a police department come and pick it up and process it, check for her DNA and things of that nature. And you know, what we have is simply that. Last time they were seen at the curve on 181 walking towards the store. Last time. That's it. And never to be seen again, either of them.
The lack of progress in finding Danielle and Dorothy is frustrating for law enforcement and the Pitcher family. Detective Hoke wonders if Danielle and Dorothy did really just walk away, or if there's more that local figure Danny knows.
We hear something every once in a while and look into it, and we find that, no, that's another dead end. And one thing that caught my attention, when I went into the case file, I too had thought, well, we need to look at the dad. We really need to look at the dad, because one of my thoughts were, I wonder if he was abusing or sexually abusing the girls, the children, and mom caught wind of it or something and was going to come forward with it, or maybe just abusing Danielle and Dorothy was going to come forward with it, and maybe he did that. And we were never able to get anything that would substantiate that. We were also told by a person that he said that he thought that they had been picked up about halfway from where they lived to a store that they were supposedly going to. According to the family, they were going to, when they were interviewed, they said, no, the last time we saw them is when they left the home to walk to the store, which is a pretty good little walk from where the house is. But they say that they actually did that quite often, and that was looked into and found that, yeah, they actually made that walk quite often. One of the leads was that Danny Ray and maybe De La Cruz had picked them up, and that they had some type of relationship started or something to that degree, if I recall right, to the point that Danny was possibly having sex with Danielle at the time, who would have been a little girl. The story, if you will, that goes around, picked up in the bars and people talking, was that Dorothy somehow or another found out that Danny was having sexual intercourse with her daughter, and that she had confronted him at the house. And that he killed both of them and then buried them, burnt them, or what have you. And again, we were never able to substantiate any of that stuff. Danny, in the meantime, through the years, has been in and out of prison. God, I can't count the times. He's in again right now in prison. It's just one of those cases that it just baffles us. I don't know. I even got to the point there thinking, I wonder if she wanted, you know, you made a suggestion earlier that a lot of the people on these missing person cases want to be missing, don't want to be discovered, are leaving a life that is either very disturbing or abusive relationships or what have you. And the impression that I got is that the dad was an alcoholic. And I thought for a while, I wonder if she just left it all. She got Danielle and said, and left. Now, again, if that did happen, she's still in hiding then. And I think it's odd that if anyone, if Danielle would have, I would think eventually say, hey, Mom, why are we running?
There are several shady characters in this story. But with Sonozona being less than 30 miles away from the international border, we wanted to ask Detective Hoke if trafficking or simply going into Mexico were possibilities.
Generally in the southbound, unless they're doing a southbound operation that day, they may look into the trunk. But generally, if a southbound operation ain't going on, it's not that they don't always have outbound working. It's just not every trunk is popped going southbound or every person secondary for inspection. You know, human trafficking at that time when they came up missing really was not something that was going on like it is in today's day and time. Today's day and time, that's huge. Human trafficking is huge, and trafficking to exploit women and children, female children for sex is huge nowadays. But that really wasn't something that you heard of back then. I'm not saying it didn't happen back then. What I'm saying is that darn sure didn't happen to the degree that it has now and in the recent past years.
With so few leads and evidence leading to any one conclusion, we asked Detective Hoke about other possible outcomes. Even if they may be unlikely, here's Detective Hoke.
I mean, there's significant drug cases on the border, okay? And there have been even back then, drug cases. Because this is a corridor. This area is large amounts of drugs and humans come through here that are being smuggled. Back in those days, there's really a lot of drugs being smuggled and what have you. So were they involved to the point that they may have testified somewhere and they had to put them in witness protection? I seriously doubt that. And another thing, I may be wrong on this, but I'm almost certain that if a state and local agency is working a case such as this, and we've actually had them even entered into the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, I think that we would have been contacted in some way, shape, or form. I just don't think that we would continue to be led by the marshal's office into thinking that, you know, they have somebody that we're looking for and not say something.
There was one lead that Detective Hoke believed had some potential. He believes that there are some local people who know more than they've shared. Unfortunately, some have died or moved away. This is what he told us about that one possible lead.
One of the things that came up, I was working another homicide, and I was told that a person who had witnessed this homicide had actually been on the side of a mountain looking down at the residence when the homicide occurred because he ran with that group of methamphetamine smugglers and what have you. And I tracked him down to a prison. And when I did, I was told that, I said, well, I'm going to have to interview this guy and what have you. And they said, we're going to have to make special arrangements for that because he's dying of cancer. And I says, how long has he got? And they say, he's terminal. Our understanding, he's only got weeks to live. And in fact, I think they're going to be letting him out soon. Because of that, the Department of Corrections doesn't want to continue to pay for whatever. So I went to the prison. This particular one was in Tucson. It was the state prison. And I talked with him. And I asked him, I said, hey, I said, I'm told that you may have information on two things. One, this homicide that I'm working. And another thing, I was told that you might have information on Dorothy and Danielle Pitcher. And he gave me some info on the homicide. And then when it came to the pictures, he had nothing to say on that. And I told him, I said, you know what? I said, you ran with, at that time, Danny Ray and De La Cruz and all these other guys, gals that were into the methamphetamine world and all this crap. And I would think that he would have known. I really do. I think that if the ones that initially were thought to have been suspect, Danny Ray and all that, because he ran with them. I know within my experience, what I've seen in the past is these people eventually tell each other. They'll get high, they'll sit around, hell, they all help each other with it and say, hey, you know what? You know what I did? You know, kind of like to them, it's a badge of I don't know, of makes them look good in the eyes of a criminal, I guess. That, hey, you know what I did? I raped and killed 20 people. I think they would have told him that. He had nothing to say about it. And then I left that prison, and about 2 months later, I heard that they had released him. I talked to his brother, and I told his brother, I said, how's he doing? He said, he's dying right now. He's at his house dying. I think I just got lucky on the timing. He said, he's going to die any day now. Would you and your family mind if I go visit him? And he arranged to have that done. So I went into the house where they had him. They had him in a living room. And the last time I'd seen him was just a few months before that at prison. And he had deteriorated quite a bit. And I told him, I said, you know why I'm here? We've talked about it before. And he was in really bad shape. And I said, you know, I'm pleading with you that if there's anything else you can tell me on that homicide and anything on the pictures, please, now's the time to do it. And he didn't have nothing to say. And when I was done with that interview, me and my partner, I really walked away from that one thinking, you know, anything that everybody might have thought before with Danny Ray maybe being the suspect or De La Cruz, this guy ran with them. They were in a tight circle together. I think he would have known. And what would he have to lose at that time? A lot of people, when they're dying, want to clear their conscience, even some bad guys, in hopes of maybe making it to the pearly gates. And I just think I would have got something from him on that.
Finally, we asked Detective Hoke what anyone with information about the disappearance of Danielle and Dorothy should do.
Yeah, if you have any information, please call the Sheriff's Department. Another good number to call would be area code 520-803-3555. That would put you directly in contact with our dispatchers under our CCOM unit. And you could tell them that, hey, I need to report something in regards to the pitcher case, and I'd like to speak with Detective Hoke. They would put the caller through to me.
Dawn told us about the toll this all took on her father.
No, my dad died 5 years after my mother and sister. He died in 1998. I believe that's what killed him. He couldn't stay down there anymore because it was making him crazy. And he also had 5 kids to take care of. So he moved to Maine, closer to a few of us, so we could be there to help him and do everything. And then he got extremely sick, and they didn't know what his problem was. It was around 97. He got extremely sick. They thought maybe tuberculosis. They thought everything, test after test after test. Then they finally put him in the hospital. My 5 brothers and sisters moved into my house with me while my dad was in the hospital for like Christmas. I had them Thanksgiving. I had them Christmas. They'd go back to my other sister's house to go to school. And then January 5th of 98, my father called me and said, Lala, I need you to come up here and see me. And I said, why? And he said, I'm not going to tell you to get here, and I want you to get a couple of your sisters to come along with you. And I said, Dad, I'm not driving until you speak to me. And that's when he told me that 3 to 6 months to live. So I couldn't tell my brothers and sisters. I drove up there, picked up my sisters. We went to the hospital. My dad told us. They were crying, and the doctors told us that he could live for a year if he did chemo and radiation. And my dad died on January 28th, 23 days later.
So what happened to Dorothy and Danielle Pitcher on May 23rd, 1993, after they set out to run a short errand? Dorothy had mentioned to several people that she wanted to go back home to visit her family. But why would she take just one of her children? It sounded like she was talking about a vacation, not disappearing. Why would she leave without all of her belongings? Were Dorothy and Danielle abducted? We know that Dorothy had a strict rule about getting into cars with strangers. But what if it was someone they knew? What about all the local characters who seem to know more than they've shared over the years? What about Danny Morris and his family? Is there any truth to those stories? Could Deanna Merrifield be another victim? What's striking is that when you look at photos of Deanna and Danielle, there's a resemblance. They were close in age, with Deanna being 13 and Danielle being 14. And both had shoulder-length blonde hair. 26 years after the pictures disappeared, there are still so many questions and so few answers. It seems as though there are people out there who have pieces to this puzzle. They just need to come forward. At the time of their disappearance, Danielle Pitcher was 14 years old, 5'1" tall and approximately 110 pounds. She had blonde hair and blue eyes. Dorothy Pitcher was 47 years old and approximately 5'2" tall and weighing around 145 pounds. She had brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Danielle and Dorothy Pitcher, please call the Cochise County Sheriff's Office at 520-432-9500 or 1-800-THE-LOST.
It's been a long road, the 26 years, with the Sheriff's Department. We are a very poor family. 26 years ago, there was a lot of issues with the Sheriff's Department, and just the fact that they questioned my father more than they looked for answers. And so I have to say that over the years, hands change, new detectives take over the case, because it did swap hands a lot. And it became a very, very cold case. And then there were a couple of detectives 10 years ago that brought it back to their attention and actually cared about it. Maybe even a little bit longer than that, maybe we'll say 10 to 15 years. And they started bringing it back to light in a positive way. Like, this is serious. There's somebody missing or presumed dead, instead of, oh, probably the dad did it. Who cares? They're poor. Which was how we felt, that how the original Cochise County had felt about it. I told them that's how they made us feel. I mean, even in the police report, because I have the whole police report from day one. They're very, very rude. But bygones be bygones, the new detectives over the last 10, 15 years, they have been trying to be positive and looking at this as they should have from the beginning.
That brings us to the end of episode 189. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Oregon.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.